Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jen. I'm really glad to be part of this interesting panel and to present on behalf of a wonderful study team. And with the disaster mitigation reminder, I probably should go home. There's a lot going on the East Coast. So everybody here who's from the East Coast, good luck with everything. I hope your families are well. So Dr. Taurus was the lead author on this study, and he's not able to be here today, but both he and Dr. Chalupa wear lots of hats, and they're at the University of Chicago is one of those things that they are doing, which I'm sure there's a long, long list, but neither Dr. Taurus or I have anything to disclose. We're also joined today, though, by a lot of the other members of the team. So we have Deborah Brown, who heads up the American Lung Association of the Mid-Atlantic here with us, and Joy Blankley-Meyer, who is the executive director of PACT. And also my boss, Kristen Minott, is here from Public Health Management Corporation. So you have a lot of folks to help answer questions if I go through something or miss something altogether. And funding for the program, or the study that we did, was provided by the Department of Health in Pennsylvania. So clean air in Pennsylvania kind of had a lot of steps along the way, and there's still more steps to go, actually. In 1988, that was the first time we had the mandate to have separate smoking areas. We all know now that that's not sufficient, but that's when we got started with that. So in the 90s and the early 2000s, there was additional provisions, policies to regulate smoking in other venues, in specific situations, but there wasn't another major tobacco-free or smoke-free issue until 2006. That was the first time there was a county-level ordinance, and there was a handful of other city and county ordinances that passed. They were all eventually repealed because of preemption in Pennsylvania. So finally, in 2007, Philadelphia, which is the only county that is able to have a law that's stronger than the state's, did implement a Clean Indoor Air Act, worker health focused, and in 2008, Pennsylvania filed suit with the Clean Indoor Air Act that I'll tell you about today, and that does cover most, that's going to be an important word later on, most workers in Pennsylvania and when they're working in indoor environments. So this all happened in 2008, right? We were not the first state to pass a smoke-free law, but there was a lot of interest in studying what happened in Pennsylvania from the folks who were there, the legislators and the policymakers who spent so much time kind of thinking about this and weighing the options, the pros, the potential cons, were interested in seeing what happened. The Department of Health, of course, had an interest not just because of their focus on the health of Pennsylvanians, but also because the monitoring of the Clean Indoor Air Act falls under their umbrella. The media, of course, businesses, as that was one of the fears of having a clean indoor air law, not unique to Pennsylvania, but there was fear that there'd be negative economic impact in hospitality industries. That argument came up again in Pennsylvania as well. And the residents, because after all, this was a worker health law. But like I said, we weren't the first to do this. There actually were other economic impact studies that had already been completed. You know, could we just look at those studies and find out what's going to happen? But I just want to see a quick show of hands. If anyone here lives in a state that's not like any other state, so you can't use their stuff, so you we're totally different. Don't compare us to anyone else. Yeah, we're one of those places. But there was something of value to that in this case because Pennsylvania's law isn't comprehensive. So in the literature, most of the studies that have been done in the state or county or whatever geographic level it was, they were on about comprehensive laws. So there is a unique twist to the study that we completed in that we looked at the exceptions in Pennsylvania's law and actually took that under consideration. The two that we're going to talk about today are type 1, which are drinking establishments. So those are freestanding bars or standalone bars. And then type 2 exceptions are restaurants with attached bars. So those are the two we're going to focus on, but they're actually a kind of a pretty long list of exceptions to our current legislation. Casinos, tobacco shops, cigar shops, some of these are application-based and some are not. Like private clubs are exempt without proof of anything. So, you know, it gets pretty complicated. But so does this really matter? You know, there's exceptions. Is that really a big deal? Well, we tried to estimate, is this really a big deal or not? So we looked at the information we had on the exceptions, and for each county, we tried to identify what percent of the bars in each county had exceptions. So you can see from the map, the darker blue here, more than half the counties had more than half their bars with exceptions. So there's legal smoking in more than half the bars and more than half the places. So actually, that is kind of a pretty big deal. With restaurants, those type 2, it's less so because there's additional physical issues that they have to meet to get their application accepted. But it ranges pretty much between 5 and 15% of restaurants that have attached bar, or restaurants in general, can qualify and get a type 2 exception. So again, this may not be huge, huge numbers, but the spread is over the entire state. So our main research question in this case was, was there any implications from the Clean Indoor Air Act on these businesses in particular, the restaurants and the bars? We did our homework. We made sure that we had the information included that we knew we were going to need. So we controlled with general merchandise tax data, just for the general economic kind of prosperity to compare to that. We looked at seasonality, some fixed county effects, things like the population, but also where you were in the state. Is this really loud? Am I like screaming? There's an echo I can hear up here. Sorry. There's health districts. So we looked at health districts. We looked at urbanicity, if the state was considered, or if the county was considered urban or rural, and also this issue of percent of exceptions. And that is an estimate, but it was the best we could do at the time. And actually, it's still we wouldn't be able to get a more exact number. We were able to compare to Philadelphia because they had a separate law that was actually implemented at a different time. So that actually came in handy. We looked at as many years as we could, and we used more than one type of regression to examine these impacts, and it was a time series analysis. So we got information from the Department of Revenue, the sales and use tax. This was for full service, limited service, restaurants, and also bars. We had the general merchandise information. We had the number of exceptions from the Department of Health. We also used consumer price index information and census information. Because it took a really long time to get those data, we wanted to look at something a little bit shorter term. So in the meantime, we kind of checked out an indirect indicator of liquor licenses in Pennsylvania. So we got that from the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. So what did we find? Nothing. There was no negative economic impact, which actually takes a lot to find nothing. So what we found actually matched what everyone else had found about their laws, that there was no negative economic impact for having a clean indoor air law. This is true when we considered inflation, seasonality, exceptions, county population, and it worked in actually both the models. So we're pretty confident about that being the actual result. You can see actually a lot happens in 2008. I don't know if you guys remember 2008, but it wasn't like the peak of everybody's state's incomes and taxable sales. So, we really had to look at things over time, and we had quarterly data that we were able to get. We tried to get monthly. It was not available. When we look specifically at bars, again, no significant negative economic impact here, and this held true. This is the catch. This held true no matter the number of exceptions. So having more exceptions, so legal smoking gave you no greater benefit, and having no smoking did not hurt you. So there wasn't that fear of having a clean indoor air law is going to shut down all our bars, no one will go out anymore, wasn't true. Seasonality was. People didn't want to go out in the cold. So in wintertime, sales went down. When we look specifically at restaurants, no negative impact. That's for limited and full-service restaurants. Again, the exceptions were not protective, or there was no difference there. Seasonality was important, and restaurants were very closely tied to general merchandise trends. So when there was general times of prosperity, restaurant sales went up. When things went downhill a little bit for overall stuff, the same happened with restaurants. Liquor licenses, there was no significant change in the year before and then the year subsequent. There was changes, but they weren't significant. Overall, no negative economic impact here. The issue of having the counties and the exceptions is really the piece that we feel like is going to be really important for Pennsylvania and possibly some other places that are still kind of considering what they're going to do with their current clean indoor air information. And our study aligns with everything else that has been seen. There was some evidence of significant positive impact on per capita drinking establishment sales and full service restaurant sales. So there's some good news there. So the issue of no negative is definitely true, and the issue of possibly some positive is also able, we were also able to see that in the study. Philadelphia, interestingly enough, also had no negative impact, just so you know. So what happens here? What's next? Pennsylvania can use this information to inform any future tweaks to the law. If there's a new law that becomes implemented, they can use this information to say, well, remember we put in all those exceptions because we were afraid that there was going to be a big downfall here? That didn't happen. Does that mean we should reconsider? It probably is worth discussing. Also, this counters some of the things that get sprinkled in, not just in Pennsylvania, but in clean air discussions all over the country about this potential negative economic downfall. Really what this means for us now on the research side is, well, what happens health-wise? So if this fear issue is taken away, that the hospitality industry is not going to collapse, then what happens with this issue of exceptions? You're, by the nature of the law, with exceptions, you are not protecting workers in certain venues. And what is the potential impact of that? So that's kind of the next step and what we want to continue looking at, and those are the kinds of questions that we'll have to ask when we're faced with laws that kind of set things up so that there's not equal protection. Does it really matter? Again, yeah, probably, because this is the number of exceptions Pennsylvania has to its law, and you see that line's pretty flat. So there are people, they're legally allowed to apply for exceptions, and there's no level playing field, if you will. So there are still a lot of venues. There's never been below 2,500 that have legal smoking indoors. So still more to come there. So again, thank you. And we have a couple of folks who can help answer questions, and their contact information is here as well. Thanks.